Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. So today I'm delighted to be joined by a fellow adoptee, Zara. Lovely to see you. Lovely to meet you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So could you share a little bit about your story with the audience, please, with the listeners?
Yes. So I'm an adoptee. I was born in the 60s in London. And, those years people were very quiet about adoption. It was just like, you adopt a baby, take it home as if it's your own, no questions asked. So I was sort of raised in that atmosphere, went to a good school, all that nice stuff, good family. I had a brother that was also adopted, and I did struggle as a child, but I didn't really understand why I struggled. And I felt I had a lot of questions. I was sort of one of those adoptees that I wanted to know everything from when I was really little. Some people, it doesn't happen until they're older, but I was like a born searcher, shall we say. And, it was very difficult for my mum to be open, because I think she had a lot of fear. Then what did it mean about our relationship? I had drug and alcohol use when I was younger. And when I was 22, I got sober. I mean, I can go into all of that. It's a whole long thing. But I'm sort of grateful for it, because I got sober very young. I was acting out a lot, and I didn't really understand. I had a lot of anger, a lot of rage and insecurity. And when I was 22, I got sober. And when I got sober, I realized that I needed to know my story. Like, for me, I couldn't really move forward unless I knew my story. So I started searching, and I found my birth mother when I was 23, 24, who also lived in England, got my story. We could talk about reunion for hours. I'm still in touch with her. That's been complicated. We've learned a lot, but I have a sister, I have niece. We've worked through a lot over the years, shall we say. And I found my story. For me, it was very helpful. I know for some adoptees, that's not always possible to find. And then I moved to the States and got married, had kids. And during that time, more stuff came up for me around the adoption experience. It was almost like I needed to be in another country to be away from both my mothers to really understand what it meant. And for me, becoming a mother was a real understanding of both mothers in a way I'd never had before. The understanding my mother couldn't have children, my adopted mother, and my birth mother being so young, what was that like for a woman to have to give a baby away? What was that like for my mother? I felt so sad for my mother not being able to have a natural child, because I knew really that's what she wanted in many ways. Even though she loved me, I knew. So I began to delve really into my adoption experience and began to write about it, began to go to workshops, met other adoptees. And it was fantastic for me, because finally I felt I was talking the same language with people, that they just understood. There's something about being with adoptees where you don't even need to say that much, because we just know what it feels like. As they say, things happen to us on a cellular level when we were babies, so there's not always words for all the feelings. And for the last bunch of years, I've written a lot about my experience. I started writing about becoming a mother. Other adoptees wrote to me saying they had similar experiences. And, over the years, just written a lot, had a book come out in England again, 2 years ago or something. And finally met my birth father in my 50s through Ancestry DNA, which is another whole thing, we can talk about as well. So it's really been a lifelong, every time I think adoption is like, oh, I'm fine, I've done this, met my mother, sorted through this, lost my adopted mother, grieved that, suddenly in my 50s, I found my birth father, and here I am again, reuniting with people again, and back on that sort of adoption roller coaster.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, roller coaster is a great word. It's a word that I've used to explain my emotions, describe my emotions for a lot. I heard a great metaphor from this from one of my mentors. Is he said that life is like a roller coaster. we're on that roller coaster and we're blindfold and we keep on feeling the ups and downs. But when we actually take the blindfold off, the roller coaster is actually on a huge pontoon floating gently down the stream.
Mm-hmm.
In a peaceful and tranquil way that is only serving our own best interests.
Yeah.
But most of the time, we're on the roller coaster, afraid of the lows, and waiting for the next high.
I think, you know, being adopted, we just have an extra layer that other people don't have. You know, we have extra parents. We have double losses we have to deal with. And, you know, I was trying to explain it yesterday to someone. I said, sometimes there's a lot in my head. You know, I have lots of relationships with adoptive family and birth family, and it's trying to integrate everything. Can feel quite complicated at times. And especially when you're never fully in a family. You know, I feel with my birth mother now, yes, but it took a long time to feel really part of, because we miss years with people. So we don't have the foundation, you know, when we reunite with birth family, which in some ways is lovely that you get to know them, but, you know, sometimes those holes are gaping. And everybody's coming with their own pain too. And that's something I had to really understand with my birth mother when she met me, was she had never really dealt with her grief and loss of being a teenager and made to give a baby away at 16 in secret. You know, what a burden is that? And then meeting me, that brought all her grief to the surface. Me meeting her brought mine. And I've really had to learn over the years where we're all coming from, you know. And then my adoptive mother was insecure, and everybody has their thing, and we're all coming together with all our fears and insecurities. And just learning to understand it all has been really helpful for me.
Yeah.
To strengthen the relationships, actually.
So before we started recording,
yeah,
you talked a bit, you mentioned this, this thing of lifelong grief. Mm-hmm. You mentioned lifelong grief. Mm-hmm. And I said to you, is there any hope then?
Mm-hmm.
And you said yes. And then you talked about the fantastic community, the adoption community. You talked about tools and healing, and I'd love to explore that more.
Okay.
More with you.
Well, I think for me, what's really been the most helpful in my whole journey, first of all, I had to get sober. So I always say to adoptees, if I'm speaking to them, if you're using drugs and alcohol and you want to go find your birth mother, I really suggest you put those down first and get support around that. And as I was saying to you, obviously, I'm not speaking for all adoptees. We are overrepresented in treatment centres, in institutions, and adoptees are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their peers. Those are the facts. They have those statistics. So how can we help that? And I always think, with the level of, you know, I believe that secrecy, we're only as sick as our secrets, and we just can't get well if we're not able or move forward if we're not able to be honest. And as an adoptee, I was very protective of my adoptive mother when I was younger. First of all, I needed her desperately. I was afraid something was going to happen to her, because I definitely, you know, was insecure. Not all adoptees have that. I was afraid of being abandoned, being left. But I was also very aware that she was also fragile in her own way around her experience as being an adoptive mum. There was love between us, no doubt, but she didn't understand where I was coming from, and I probably didn't understand where she was coming from. So what and when I met my birth mother too, I think I wanted her to fix me. Like, I finally met you, why can't you fix me? And she was saying to me, why can't you fix me? Well, I was an adult. I wasn't the baby anymore. So what I really found the most useful is being, I believe that groups and talking to like-minded people are the most beneficial. Like if we're on our own in our own heads, we're never going to really be able to move forward. But it's scary. You know, at the beginning, it's really scary to go into a room and to hear people talking about what you felt your whole life and been afraid to maybe admit. And it was just, it's been so extremely helpful for me to talk with other adoptees, to really learn to read about adoptive mothers, birth mothers, like everybody, and understand about babies, that babies do grieve the loss of their mother. It doesn't make us wrong. It's just what happens to babies, and it can come out in different ways. And feeling one's feelings, which most people don't want to do, because who wants to sit in a room and cry, right? You're like, oh, I don't want to do that. But I found that each time I've been able to admit my truth and have a good old cry, I feel better. It's just what happens. I feel lighter. I feel more connected. And actually, you know, something I'll say to adoptive parents when they're scared, you know, it made me feel more connected to my adoptive parents. It was almost like knowing my story made me feel more connected to loving my adoptive parents. Whereas when I was younger, not having anything, I just felt, you know, like I was sort of floating around, not grounded, and who did I really belong to? So, you know, it takes years, and having children really helped me. I mean, it really got me in touch with what was it like for my mum not to be able to have a baby? Like to understand, I think as we grow older, right, we mature as well. So we see things in a different way. But there is a lifelong impact, no matter what, you know, I've gone through times in my life and I'm like, I'm just not going to be adopted anymore because this is just way too complicated. You know, I've got this mother saying this and this mother saying that. I'm in the middle. I'm trying to please everybody. I can't do it. You know, I cannot play that role anymore. I just don't want to be adopted anymore. Well, you know, I am. And I do have lots of family, which is fantastic. But there is a lifelong impact. You know, having children was brought it up in my face. And for my adoptive mother and for my birth mother. It just does. When my adoptive mother died in 2008, it was a profound loss for me because it was such a difficult relationship, I think. It was so complicated. You know, I don't know what it's like to not be adopted. So I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't really know what it's like. So I just feel that, and maybe I'm an artist, I'm a writer. I feel things extremely deeply as well, just as a person. So I've had to work through a lot, but it's okay. You know, like I was saying to you earlier, when I was younger, the grief would overwhelm me. I didn't know it was grief, and I felt very depressed where I couldn't really function. Today, that's not the case. I've learned so much about it that I'm able to say, oh yeah, Zara, this is just this. You know, if somebody says something, doesn't mean they're going to abandon you. It's just triggered by this. And it lives more alongside me. I mean, I have to be honest, you know, I did meet my birth father in 2016, an hour away from where I was living. He's Italian, I'm English. We were living in New Jersey, 1 hour away from each other. Wow. And I now have, there's seven of us from him. I met another sister who was adopted, who's in America. That's a whole, you know, that's the, read my book, Somebody's Daughter, but that's what I wrote about. And he, my adoptive father died, and 8 months later, my birth father just dropped dead. So I lost two fathers in 8 months. That was in 2018 and 20, you know, I can't even remember now, whatever it was, like 3 years ago. Who loses two fathers in 8 months? An adoptee. You know, that's when you, and it was, yes, my God, did I grieve? Yes, I did. But I knew enough to say, it's okay. You're going to get through it, just because of doing all the work before and learning about it before. I mean, everybody grieves, whether you're adopted or not. It's life. So yeah. Is that helpful? Is that useful? I mean, that's sort of, I'm trying, you know, I know we don't have loads of time, so I'm trying to like give you so much information. Yeah.
I appreciate that, Zara. I appreciate that. I appreciate you doing that. I'm going to put some, just there'll be some links in the show notes to the books, listeners, so you don't need to try and scribble that down or rewind it. That's what I often do when I'm listening to podcasts. So I've had to rewind that, and I've heard that book tip. I need to. So there'll be links into it. You realize. For me, the key thing that leapt out for me is the thing that you finally that you said it just before you finished that segment, and you said that you know that you're going to get through it.
Yeah.
So this is for me kind of the thing. I mean, I'm not a religious guy, but people say, this too shall pass, right?
Yes.
It's one of those phrases, right? Phrases. And it's like, that's just, it's just thrown away. And to me, it's that. I've talked about this on other episodes. I'm going to talk about it again, because I think knowing that we can cope and not being afraid, like I have been in the past intensely afraid of intensely bad emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And being afraid of being afraid just makes you more afraid. Right. Being afraid of being afraid of being afraid. It's like, I call this the trauma ball. So
yes,
you learn some stuff you think you learn some stuff and you think, oh, I'm okay now. And then you go back in, you know, once more into the breach. And then you're thinking, I mean me. Then I'm thinking, I should be over this. And I have become, on occasions, emotophobic, as one of my mentors talks about this. He doesn't talk about me being it. He talks about society being it. We are emotophobic. We're mm-hmm. very scared of mm-hmm. being afraid. We're very afraid of being afraid. We're very worried about being worried. And then we start beating ourselves up because we've done some work. We've done a lot of work. We've read a lot of books. We've been on a lot of courses. We've been on a lot of therapy. And then we start beating ourselves up. And then we start beating ourselves about beating ourselves up about beating ourselves up.
And you see, yeah.
It's the vortex. It's the trauma vortex, which I have been down.
Yes.
I have to turn around and look at the light. I have to go the other way, because if I'm going down this rabbit hole, it just gets darker and darker the further I go down it. I need to turn around and I need to look up and see the light at the end of the rabbit hole. And that's why I said to you, is there hope? The hope is there.
Yeah. But also,
so many of us are focused, and me too, right? So many of us are focused on the darkness that we can't see the light because we're looking in the wrong direction.
Right. But I do think, I mean, I agree with what you said, and I do think that sometimes as an adoptee that, you know, I'm sober 34 years, I go to meetings, I pray, I do my yoga, I play tennis, da, da, da. But sometimes I do have to do the trauma work, because actually I think, no, because then you can start feeling there's something wrong with me. But I'm doing all this, I'm reading, like you're saying, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Why do I still have these moments? Because I also need to do trauma work. You know, there's different types, the tapping stuff, and there's body work, which I think is really useful for our adoptees, because a lot of our feelings, you know, I mean, our trauma happened before there were words, so it can be stuck in our bodies. And I think sometimes for me, I am reacting. Like the other day, my boyfriend said something and I immediately took it as something else. And, you know, when we're hysterical, it's historical. You know, that's another great line for me. When we're hysterical, it's historical. And I realized it wasn't really what he said. It was fear, because this had been said in my past. Da, 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 and it builds. Another thing that I found so helpful was I did a talk with Gabor Maté recently, which is on YouTube. Adoption is like about relinquishment and adoption and addiction. And something he talked about which I do now a lot, is we were reacting normally to an abnormal situation. But because of society, they, you know, want adoption to be all beautiful. And listen, there are beautiful parts to adoption. We know that. Some children desperately need homes and need families. And there are families that love them and cherish them and help them in their lives in ways that, you know, would never have happened before. But it is perfectly normal to be sad that you don't know who your mother is. That is normal, because it's actually abnormal to be in a situation where you know nothing. And then maybe it's more our generation where you have no story. Oh, your mother gave you away. What, you're not going to have any feelings about that? And that has really helped me a lot, because somehow I blamed myself. I was like, there's something wrong with me. Why can't I accept everything? Why do I have all these feelings? And, you know, over the years, it's like, because it's normal. It's, you know, if a mother died in a car crash and there was a little kid, most people would say to that child, I'm so sorry that you lost your mother in that car crash. That must be so hard. Nobody says that to adoptees. We are basically told, you must feel so grateful for being adopted. And I didn't feel grateful, because I too felt the grief. And if that had been acknowledged, and what I feel is the most useful part, is if we acknowledge, it's okay to acknowledge it, doesn't mean we're going to go down that rabbit hole. Actually, if we avoid it, then we're going to go down that rabbit hole. That's just my experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's so much there. I'm talking, I you know, different reasons. The rabbit hole's got a different label in front of each.
Right.
You know, I've been down, so I got bullied a fair bit when I was a kid. So I've been down that kind of part of the rabbit hole. It's all one interconnected rabbit hole. Most of my stuff actually has been around business. So feeling that I'm not good enough at business. But I've had, and where my self-esteem is wrapped up in the performance of the business. That's been a bigger cause of emotional distress in my life than that adoption feeling.
But that in a way could be connected, because I always feel like I've heard so many adoptees say, like, I've struggled a lot with feeling good enough, absolutely, in all areas of my life. And I think it's because, you know, even though I was told your mother gave you away, she was young, da, 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 she, you know, I just felt she didn't want me. The truth is, it's like, whether our birth mothers really, truly wanted to give us away, the fact is they did. So the fact is, you feel it. My mother gave me away. She signed that paper. But the sad part is, I always think, is, so I felt abandoned by my birth mother, whether it's right or wrong, that's how I felt as an adoptee. I was abandoned by my birth mother. But the sad part is, then I spent the rest of my years abandoning myself. And that's been a big piece for me to say, she did a one-time thing. I've abandoned myself for years. I used drugs, I used alcohol, I acted out, I hurt myself in so many ways. And self-love has become a really huge part of recovery too, of not abandoning myself, of saying to myself, I am here for a reason, God, spirit, whatever you want to believe in, here I am. My children, when I looked at my child, you know, my first child, I knew he wasn't a mistake. There was no way a baby is a mistake. All that stuff really helped me look at that. But it's sad that kids, you know, will take that on. You know what I mean? Like, it makes me sad when I hear so many adoptees abandoning themselves because of that initial, I believe it's from the initial wound, personally.
So I've done all of my learning, actually, all my consciousness, all my doing the work stuff, whatever you want to call it, has been outside of the adoption world.
Mm-hmm.
All of it.
Can I ask, I don't know if you want to share with people what it is.
Sure. Lots of different stuff. I call it practical spirituality kind of stuff. So courses, group work, group stuff, mentoring, coaching, a little bit of therapy. I've had a lot of coaching. I've had a lot of coaching in business, and I've found that I much prefer the coaching. Coaching has been far better for me personally than therapy. In that world, I have found that nobody thinks that they're good enough.
Oh, really interesting. Yeah.
This seems to be part of the human condition rather than solely an adoptee phenomenon. However, as an adoptee, I see that we have the most compellingly strong, concrete reason for believing that we weren't good enough. However, just because it's very compelling and just because it's very concrete, it isn't true.
Well, can I play the devil's advocate?
Go for it. Go for it.
There is a difference between us and people that stayed with their mothers, because actually babies' brains develop in a different way when they're taken away from their mothers. So synapses in the brain, if a baby, you know, when a baby's born and they're laid on them, I'm not a brain scientist.
We're not our brains anyway, so.
No, but what I'm saying is when a baby is laid on the mother, all these little synapses, you know, fuse, serotonin, all the levels. So the reason that adoptees can have more anxiety is literally that they didn't get those synapses fused at the beginning of their life. And then they start to self-medicate. Most of us that are addicts are self-medicating for we want to feel happy, right? We want the happy drug, so sometimes it's nobody's fault. It's just that's what happens to babies. But there are other ways of developing, like if people have depression, they say exercise. You know, okay, all these sort of tools. So there is a difference between babies that are given away. If the start in life is just different, the brain development is different. And okay, we're not our brains, but if a child is constantly acting out, and if an adoptee addict is constantly self-medicating, there's a problem, right? Somebody needs to sit down and go, right, let's look at this. How can we develop the brain in a different way so we're not trying to kill ourselves? Because the sad thing is you actually think you're trying to make yourself feel better, but you're killing yourself in the process. So that's...
This fascinates me, Zara, because yeah. I've been trying to... I've had this brain conversation with a few people, right? I've been trying to get to the bottom of it, and I'm still trying to get to the bottom of it. So I'm going to be devil's advocate to your devil's advocate, and we'll keep on going. Yeah. But I was talking to a mum whose son has got FASD, right? The fetal alcohol system thing. Disorder. And I said, are there any moments? She said, this is a brain injury. And I said, okay. And she said, I know this woman. I know her well. She's been on the show. She's called Robbie. I've forgotten her surname. Anyway, she's in the that's really bad. I've forgotten her surname. Anyway, Robbie has been on the show, and I'm going on hers. And she said it's a brain injury. And when I saw it was a brain injury, it was So she's an adoptee. She's the adoptive mum of this.
Right.
This boy with FOC, and there's more than one of them's got it. More than one of the kids have got it. And I said, she said it's a brain injury. She said, are there moments of peace? So if I think of a brain injury, I'm thinking of a brain injury, and therefore the brain injury is constant. It's like the car is broken. Yeah. That's the metaphor that I'm using. Now, that car is broken and it won't go again. It won't work again until the tow truck comes to pick it up, takes it to the garage. They fix the problem. Bob's your uncle. And then, and there we went.
The brain is very clever. The brain is very clever.
So, yeah, but I'm thinking brain injury. You're thinking like it's broken. I said, no. Are there moments of peace? And she said, yes, there are moments of peace. So if that's the case, then the brain injury, which I'm thinking the brain injury is constant,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the condition of the brain is constant, and therefore the brain, if we said that the brain drives our thoughts, the thoughts drive our feelings, the feelings drive our actions, then there isn't going to be any peace. There isn't going to be any peace because of this brain injury. She said, no, there's not. So I'm thinking, well, this the answer must be beyond the brain, or my metaphor must be wrong. I don't understand this, but this is what I'm exploring at the moment.
The brain really does make new pathways. I know a woman who works with adoptees. She does incredible stuff. She puts all these things on your head and she literally helps the brain make new pathways for younger adoptees that are really struggling. So your brain, I mean, you're going to find ways, right? Because we have to survive. So the brain is going to survive ways. The way a baby can act as if they're attaching to an adoptive mother. Right? My adoptive mother go, oh no, my baby's attaching fine. No, a baby is so clever. And this is another thing I love to talk about. Babies are so clever. They know everything that's going on at a cellular level and they know what to do to survive. So, you know, we will adapt in every way that we have to survive. But, you know, who wants to only sometimes have peace of mind? Wouldn't it be nice to have it for longer periods of time? And I think that's what all the support stuff does, is it helps if one is struggling, it helps one have longer periods of peace of mind, because you're repatterning each time, even the thought process of I'm not good enough to, no, I am good enough. I am loved. My birth mother did love me. It was just, she wasn't allowed to keep me. You know, whatever it is, I change. My baby's meant to be here. If my baby's meant to be here, it means I was meant to be here because I'm the mother of this baby. All these sort of awakenings I've had of you know, because sadly my brain was very negative when I was younger. So for me, I've had to work very hard. It's almost like, I always think of it like a muscle when you're working out. Sometimes it's not necessarily going to change unless we make a concerted effort to as well go, no, thank you very much. You know, it's like you're talking to yourself. Thank you very much. You've told me that before. That doesn't help me. I'm not listening, or whatever you need to do. But I always think that body work is very good for adoptees as well. And the spiritual thing I think is really important too. I actually feel that where many adoptees I talk to, somehow I feel we're more open to things, maybe because as kids, we were just more aware of things. I don't know. But I do not feel, and I will always argue this point, being adopted is not the same as being kept by your mother. Physically, it is just not the same. It cannot be the same. Growing up, knowing who your parents are, is not the same as growing up not knowing who your parents are. Because you've got to think, for people, I mean, I ask people, you know, because I'm like, what does it feel like to know who your parents were? Like, what does that feel like? Because they didn't have all that stuff in their heads when they were younger. They just knew I belong to this family. They don't even think about it, right? It doesn't take up any of their space in their heads. Now, we know for adoptees, it can happen at different years. You know, sometimes people will tell me, well, I never thought about it when I was young, but when I had my first child, I did. Males, no offense, often tend to do this later. You know, the males that I've ever met and worked with, the teenage adoptees, are the ones really struggling, to be honest with you. So, you know, things happen at different times, but I'm always curious. I realize it took up a lot of headspace. And now as I'm getting through my life and I'm getting older and I know more and I understand more, I'm more able to focus on other things. because I'm not always wondering.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
You said something. So for me, the spiritual bit upstream of the brain is where the juice is at. That's where I find calmness and peace and serenity and the answers, the awareness of where things are still playing for me.
I agree. It's been a huge part of my recovery. Absolutely. The spiritual angle of life has saved me too. And that's the place that's always constant. It's like I can always go there. I know it's there. Sometimes I ignore it and I think, why am I doing that? It's so helpful. But I agree with you. I think ultimately, when no one can give me any answers, you know what I mean? Or everybody's having feelings around, you know, my birth father's wife was upset. He's had all these children. She has all her feelings. Then she cut us out. It's very painful. One sister doesn't want to tell this mother. There's too much to navigate. There's too much. And so, like, I really agree. I have to just get very quiet and go, okay, let me just, I can only do what I can do. I can only be who I can be and stop worrying about everybody else.
Because minds do want drama, don't they?
Oh, God, yeah. Mine does. But I write. That's the great thing. It's like, yay. I mean, I honestly do not know how people get through their lives without writing and singing and, because that for me has been an absolute godsend. You know, put all the drama. I'm actually about to do some writing workshops with adopted teens, and I'm really excited to do that with them because it's a great place for us to put everything.
Okay. You mentioned adopted teens. I saw some videos of adopted teens being interviewed for obviously about their feelings about being adopted. And my heart sank because they seemed to be very angry about the way that the world saw them. And no one was questioning this. And I felt that it was very disempowering. So essentially, these adopted teens, to me, seem to be waiting for the world's view of them to change until they'd be happy. And this struck me as that they're in for a very long, painful wait.
Well, we have to educate, don't we? Because it is tough. I mean, I understand, you know, my boyfriend recently realized, I said, look at every news report. When something happens, you know, when something bad happens with a child, they'll always say their adopted son, you know, killed the mother, or their adopted son blew up, da 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 da. They never write their natural son. And that is hard for adoptees. And also, sadly, on TV, birth mothers will feel the same too. In fact, a birth mother recently, because I was saying I was watching this show with an adoptee, and they said, don't tell me, the birth mother's the drug addict. You know what I mean? The stereotype. So absolutely, they're not wrong. The media wants to portray the birth mother is incapable. They could never portray a sweet, clever woman who's just overwhelmed and cannot raise a baby. No. It's got to be the drug addict. And the adoptee has to be, you know, when something bad happens within an adopted family, let's put it on the adoptee and say the adopted son. That bothers me a lot because I think it is very hard for young adoptees to read that. But I will always say, this is why you doing these podcasts fantastic. There's so much more going on with adoptee voices. We're finally saying, this is who we are. You know, when I say I want to reunite with my birth mother and people are like, why would you bother? Or why would you do that? It's like, we're not stalkers. I'm not like this crazy person. Do you know what I mean? We are responsible, respectful adults who just want to know, some of us, who we're connected to. That's all.
And what business is it of theirs? I mean, why do I even, this is the thing, like, so I care about what people think about me, but I'm not going through the world, I'm not going through the world angry. I've just realized I am. not about adoptees, but I've done a lot of work in primary schools, and nothing to do with adoption, but everything to do with, let's call it emotional intelligence, happiness. Also. And I have actually got, I have been quite disappointed in the way the system is set up. But I don't go around sharing really that anger with anybody. I try and think about what I need to do something differently. Yeah, I think that's probably the difference. So yes, I'm angry. So I'm angry with education. I'm angry with governments focusing education on academic achievement rather than happiness. Let's put it that way, right?
Me too.
So that's the way. I'm not. It's driven by, you know, governments, and this is UK, US, wherever. But I try and figure a way around that, in so that anger kind of empowers me to take action and do stuff differently rather than just being angry about it. Do you know what I mean? I try to change my approach so it empowers me to do stuff differently rather than it disempowering me and me sitting there getting upset about it and that upset going nowhere.
Well, hopefully, I agree with you. I like to think that all my pain and heartache, I have turned it into positive. I want to educate and I want to help people. And, you know, I want to share my experience because I think it is really beneficial to others and it helps me, right? But you know what? It depends where you're at. You know, maybe in time, these teen adoptees, I mean, I've met teen adoptees who are doing incredible stuff. I'm actually going to be speaking tomorrow about reunion with an 18-year-old adoptee whose mother's in prison. And she wants to, and she has a severe eating disorder, this adoptee. She is struggling so much, but she is still putting herself out there and saying, this is what I'm doing to help myself. These are my feelings around being adopted. My mother's in prison. I went to visit her. You know, wow. I worked with another international adoptee recently, also only 18, who wants people to know this is what it feels like to look different from my parents and to navigate this.
Yeah.
So I like to think, you know, there's all different people, right? There's going to always be the people that are negative and blaming. And then there's those of us that, you know, I did it for years. I was angry and miserable because I didn't know how to change. And now I know. But my God, I hit a real rock bottom with everything. And, you know, that's why I'm excited to do more stuff. That's why I really like working with adopted teens, because I think they need to be empowered. They need somebody older sometimes to say, it's okay. You're allowed to feel this way, but what are you going to do with it? You know, don't keep turning it in on yourself. I think that's
what my frustration was. And maybe as I think about it now, I only saw the video, so maybe there was some gentle, loving questioning from the people that were coaching and mentoring these people off camera. I think I've just taken it at face value, and I've just thought, well, why isn't anybody telling these? It was like it just wasn't going anywhere. But what as we bring it in, Zara, what would you say are the biggest lessons that you've learned that you'd like to share that have helped you move off rock bottom?
I think the biggest thing that has helped me in my life is always by being honest about where I'm at with somebody. And you know, if I want to abandon myself, if I want to use, if I want to do something crazy, telling somebody else, this is where I'm at, this is what my head tells me, so I don't go there. I've literally had to treat myself as somebody that has not mental illness, but needs extra care because of my trauma from when I was younger. So I've learned to be more gentle with myself. And I've also, you know, as I say, the groups have helped me understand where everybody is coming from. And something I always want to say to adopted parents is, don't be afraid. If your adoptee wants to search, don't be afraid. We love our adopted parents. It's not about that. It is about just needing to understand oneself more. That's all. So, and acknowledge the grief and acknowledge the joys. You know, that's just part of being human anyway.
And last question, what do you want to call this episode?
Maybe the lifelong impact of adoption, or the complexities of adoption, I don't know, something like that. Adoption never goes away. I don't know. The milestones, I always think of adoption as milestones. Like, it will come up in major milestones, getting married. Do you invite the birth mother? You know what I mean? It comes up because it becomes complicated. Having a baby, death of adopted parents, all these big milestones in our life, navigating adoption, maybe.
Funny enough, I was going to say I had navigating as well.
Let's do it.
But I was going to say navigating the complexities.
Yeah, that's good. We're on the same wavelength.
I was also tempted for something that was a bit more positive, but I don't think you'd kind of like that, so I won't go with that one.
What was it? I'm curious, though.
I was going to say beyond the grief.
Yeah, I mean, that's positive. I think navigating, though, is good, right? Because we just touched on so many things.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. No, it's
thanks
great.
So much.
And let me know where I can promote your show as well.
Right.
You know, send me a link and I'll put it on all my social media stuff. So
brilliant.
See you
thanks
around.
Thanks, Sarah. And thanks
you're welcome.
Take care. Bye bye.